Roguecast is the official podcast of Rogues Gallery Comics and Games. Every week we talk about new comic releases, store news, and whatever games, movies, and TV is on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
This is Dave.
I'm Nick.
And now, on with the show. Welcome to episode 232 of the Roguecast, the spooky Halloween episode.
Yes. We didn't prepare for it, did we?
No. As we record this, it is bright, sunny, like 80 degrees outside, yeah. Nothing spooky going on.
Tomorrow it's
going
to be happen. A little colder, and it will be rainy.
Yeah, so Halloween will be destroyed for the youth.
Yep.
And but it'll be great for watching, snuggling up and watching scary movies, yep. And having cocoa, and regretting your lack of candy.
Did you still go trick-or-treating when it was raining? I mean, yeah, you did. 100%. Right? Yeah, didn't care.
I did last year, and I hated it. My kids hated it. And I was hoping this year, at least it would be nice. So I hate the rain, and I curse Thor.
Well, the thing to remember is also our weather is super unreliable.
Yeah, that's true.
So there is a reasonable chance that it will miss us or miss your area,
yep.
Even as it like storms like someplace else into oblivion.
I was going to say, starting at 3 p.m. tomorrow, it's 70% chance of actual thunderstorms.
I like how we're like doing the weather.
Yeah,
we're opening with the weather.
I like it. We open with the weather.
Yeah, okay. Dave finally gets his wish, and we're becoming part weather podcast.
Yeah!
I don't know if the listeners know fully of Dave's obsession with weather.
Well, have you ever seen Twister, listeners? Do you know Billy the Extreme?
Dave is a version
that's what I aspire to.
That's your favorite Bill Paxton movie?
Yes. He's had some other roles that are nice, I'm sure. Yeah. Aliens was okay.
Sure, he's great. Whatever.
Tombstone, whatever.
But only in one movie does he play an extreme weather genius.
Yes. Yeah. Who, by merely sifting his fingers through the sand as the wind blows, can he tell if the storm is going to change direction?
By the way, how did Nicolas Cage not get that role? Doesn't that feel like a Nicolas Cage role?
It kind of does. Maybe Bill Paxton was angling for those.
No, because
that's why Nicolas Cage has never worked again.
I feel like Nicolas Cage would have like really hammed it up. Bill Paxton was actually a pretty normal dude in it. It was a straight man.
He kind of grounded everybody else.
That's what I mean. It feels like Nicolas Cage would have been right in line with the rest of that crazy movie.
Yeah, but you need the straight man with the entire cast of crazy.
It is kind of what it works. How it works there.
Even Helen Hunt was kind of crazy.
Yep.
Yeah.
He would have been like Nicolas Cage would honestly have been better off as one of the assistants
or whatever.
Yeah, the other weather chasers. Yeah. He could hang out with Dusty.
He should have been Jonah. With his corporate sponsorship.
I would like that.
It was weirdly a good role for Cary Elwes, who has not always made great career choices.
It's true.
And I can't say Twister is a good movie,
no.
But I can say that he did embody in a very entertaining character.
Sir, I'll have you know, Twister is a great movie.
No, it is not.
I own Twister. I don't know if y'all remember, but when I had a stomach virus some months ago, and I was at the emergency thing waiting for the doctor, and they had on their big screen TV Twister with subtitles on, I was live Facebooking it.
You don't even need the subtitles. You know the words.
That's true.
They live in your brain.
To be clear, for our Halloween episodes, we spent the first 3 minutes talking about the weather and then the movie Twister.
We'll try and spook it up a bit.
Hey, that opening of Twister is pretty scary.
It is.
The Twister, it makes really angry sounds.
You know what makes it less scary? You know, like her dad gets pulled out of her arms, right, or whatever.
He's trying to hold the door closed.
Right, but he gets pulled up with the door.
He gets pulled up with the door.
Mentally add, wee! And it becomes a lot less intense.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the Master Pancake version of Twister.
Yeah, they need to overdub it. Like, watch this, honey. Watch what I'm going to do. Watch what Dad's going to do. Wee!
Like I was saying, the Master Pancake version of Twister is probably my favorite Master Pancake.
It was a great outing. I don't remember if they did that, but if not.
Oh, I think they did.
They probably did.
They also interspersed the Jim Spencer weather, live action
weather
reports.
Actually getting Jim Spencer to do little inserts, comedic inserts, was great.
Yeah.
But to be clear, this is what Halloween podcast is going to be for us.
Yeah, weather and Twister.
Sure.
We'll see if we can bring it back around to Twister as often as possible.
All right. So
sort of like the Willow episode?
Yeah. That was weird stuff.
You're going to twist it back?
Yes.
All right. So, in store news, there's a couple things coming up here in November. This weekend on Saturday, we have the Illuminati Secret Meeting demo starting at 1:30. Come out, play the Illuminati card game, get a promo card.
Yep.
And then
probably join the actual Illuminati while you're at it.
Of course, yeah.
Because I figure they probably have this game that they put out that's like a fun kind of party game sort of thing. But beneath it, there's probably some subliminal stuff that gets you into like the Serpent Society thing.
I don't think the Serpent Society is part of that's a Captain America villain.
But the Illuminati has Snake Men.
Oh, I think they're lizard people.
Lizard-visaged aliens.
Lizard people. Yeah. then come out on...
Not snake men per se.
Right.
Got it.
Come out from 4 to 8 and play the Final Fantasy card game with Kate.
Yep, I know she's already got some people interested, and I think... She said, like, players of all levels, which I think would include also people who have not played it before and just kind of want to take a peek at it, see what it looks like, see the cool cards, and hear what the game is like.
I want to be Cloud. Can I be Cloud?
Cloud, the big-haired character with the big sword?
No, or Cloud from the Defenders.
Or Cloud, the embodiment of the weather phenomenon.
I was waiting for it.
Do you think in a fight...
I noticed there's a circular rotation going on in that cloud.
Who would win in a fight? Cloud from Final Fantasy or Billy the Extreme from Twister?
Cloud from Final Fantasy does have a giant sword.
He has a big sword.
Right, but I think what would happen is he'd be like all like posturing with it, and then Dusty would hit him with a van.
Yeah, I think that's about right. Yeah.
And they'd be like, come on, let's go.
I wonder what the percentages of our listeners who have seen the movie Twister and have any idea what we're talking about. I'm going to guess it's low.
Most of the listeners have bailed at this point.
It's just for us.
Wait, what was your guess?
I'm going to guess low.
No, people have seen Twister.
People love Twister.
No.
No, it's pretty well known. Listeners, please contact us. Let us know if you've seen Twister. That's all you need to say.
It's a cult movie, right? I mean, at this point...
Just send it to roguesgallerytx@gmail.com and just subject line, yes, I've seen Twister, or no, I haven't seen Twister.
Yeah, nothing else.
Nothing else.
I'm going to be so happy if we get those emails.
Or just a picture of Billy the Extreme. That's fine.
Yeah, that'll answer the question.
I'll understand then.
And then next weekend is the Ravnica weekend. There's going to be the Guildmasters of Ravnica, which is the first D&D Magic crossover product.
Yep.
And to celebrate that, which will be hitting us on Friday, that Saturday there will be a one-shot D&D adventure from 1:30 to 3:30. We have room for about 6 people. And then we are running a booster draft from 4 to 8. If you come in, you buy 4 boosters, you play some Magic, and you get a foil version of a basic Ravnica land.
That's pretty cool.
Do
you know off the top of your head, like, I don't know what the Ravnica land specifically is, like, what it would be as a D&D setting. Like, I know that they've got their, like,
scary... It's a city,
okay.
Yeah, it's like a city of different guilds.
Okay.
I get a vibe, maybe a steampunky, a little bit Eberron-ish, maybe.
Okay.
But I don't know too much.
That's all better, right. Better answer than I had in my head.
Oh. Well, did your answer have something to do with Twister?
Yes.
If Twister is the best movie about weather chasers, Ravnica is the best D&D supplement about weather chasers.
What Twister is to the Midwest, Ravnica is to steampunk.
Yes.
I like to imagine a group of D&D adventurers who are obsessed with weather. I think that could be a fun little aside.
Yeah, you have weather, you're like a storm mage.
I don't know if our listeners know, but I did once run a mashup of the A-Team and D&D.
Yep.
It's not that I couldn't do it with Twister, too.
I mean, you have Storm Titans.
And it could be like, basically, the land could be particularly ravaged by magical storms, and somebody has to find out what's going on.
Some kind of sentient storm. You do the Cloud Giants.
Right, you get a druid specialist named William the the Extreme.
the veneer was so thin.
Yeah. Just medieval.
Dusty their bard. Dusty should be their bard.
Kind of a slightly addled bard.
Helen Hunt's character, which by the way, we all know Billy the Extreme, we all know Dusty. Helen Hunt is just Helen Hunt. I don't remember what her name is in the movie.
You know what? You know, I feel like his new fiance is like an alchemist or something like that.
It's kind of
something D&D-ish.
And she's like a and Helen Hunt would be like a wizard, an old school wizard.
I
don't remember.
I think as long as you play her as sort of like tempestuous and like quick to anger and
Storm
stuff like
Mage.
That, like she is. Yeah,
Storm
there you
Mage.
Go. There you go.
Yeah, or a sorcerer.
There's the guy from Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Yep,
Cameron, whoever
I forgot he was
is.
In it. Yeah.
He was the map guy.
He's their cleric, probably.
Yeah. What would the evil weather team be doing in that context?
They would be trying to use the storms to harness it for power.
Right, they need to find out the secret of it to power their resurrection of an arch lich.
Yes.
Yeah.
Very much.
So, to be clear, we are now... 10 minutes into our Halloween episode.
Yeah.
We have thus far talked about the weather that's coming up.
Look, we mentioned some store news in there.
The movie Twister. And how we would run Twister as a D&D campaign.
Right. Well, yes. But I would also like to point out it's a fifth week, which means it's a lighter week for comic, and that's is always weird in the fifth week.
Yeah, it is a little
so
weird.
So I feel like we're fulfilling the prophecy.
Yeah, I will. No looking it up, Nick. Nick was going to IMDb. He wants to find out what Helen Hunt's character's name.
It's Joe.
Joe.
Oh, it is Joe.
It
You're
is
right.
Joe.
Of course, Dave knows.
Yeah. Sorry, I didn't realize that we were trying to get
there. Yeah, Dave has a big poster of Joe doing like a 70s kiss thing.
Yes.
What's your grandmother's
son,
name?
I was Gramsci? I won't lie, when I saw it, I was a little sad that somehow these powerful storms and soaking rains never seem to get through her tank top. I don't know why. I don't know.
You know my Gram-Gram?
Yeah. That's all I think. Yes. Gram-Gram.
So moving on to the news of the week. And it's not going to get any less weird because the news is also kind of weird.
Let's hit it.
Richard Linklater is writing and directing a Bill Hicks movie for Focus Features.
That's not super weird.
No, actually it makes perfect sense because Linklater is a Texas guy. Hicks was a Texas guy. What's weird to me is that they're doing a Bill Hicks movie.
You know, I'm trying to think of other comedians who've been profiled. All I can think of is like Lenny Bruce, but there's got to be some others.
Man on the Moon was...
Man on the Moon was Andy Kaufman, right?
There is like a kind of small cult tradition of it, yeah. I guess. Not a ton, but I'm sure I'm forgetting some others,
There was
too.
A documentary feature on Bill Hicks before too long, a little while back, and...
I think Linklater will do his great justice.
I mean, anybody who's seen him, aside from having this like biting stand-up that's political but also absurdist, mm-hmm. and very very revelatory about himself too.
Yeah, yeah.
He always struck me as a person who had a lot of anger in there, but like kind of would just sometimes just step back and just laugh at it, like ain't that ridiculous?
Yeah.
And I think that'll make a compelling character on the screen. I don't know if he had, like, deep vices. Like, I feel like the guy did some substances in his time, but I don't know if he was, like, an abuser of drugs or alcohol. I'm guessing as a comedian, yes.
Yes. Well, he talked a lot about doing LSD.
Yeah. But I think he's going to be a compelling character on screen.
And Linklater will make a good movie. I just don't know if I haven't been super into biopics lately.
Yeah. Me neither. By lately, I mean ever.
Yeah, there have been a few over the course of the years that have been solid. But none that I'm
the
like...
The only one I liked was Straight Outta Compton.
Yeah, that was
good. That was the only one that really got me.
Well, that's your subgenre, hip-hop biopics.
Yep.
But I think where do I stand on biopics? I feel like I'm neutral. I don't seek them out, but I've seen a few good ones, but I don't really seek them out. Bill Hicks though is kind of he's like on the side of my heroes.
Yeah,
he's one of the big ones. He's up there with George Carlin for me. So, and I'm pretty sure Linklater is not going to screw this up.
That's true. Yeah.
So there's a reasonable chance I will check it out. Just based on sometimes the anecdotes he would tell, even though I know they were like. Comedic versions.
Yeah.
I do feel like he, you know, he clearly like hated going to like podunk towns where people. He hated ignorant people.
Yeah,
like he and it came out in his comedy.
He would have really loved 2018.
Oh yes, he would be out there either like leading an army or it would be like dead of drugs for sure. My point being like seeing. The personal side of that, I'm gathering he had women problems. Remembering his, being very upset that serial killers would get marriage proposals and conjugal visits in jail. And he's like, and I'm not getting laid. seeing that side of the person, you know, like the person who generated that comedy sounds interesting to me.
Yeah, yeah. We saw a teaser for Teen Titans Go versus Teen Titans.
Right. Well, was it just an image?
We don't know what it is.
I guess they didn't say
so
what
So Warner Bros. Did say that there's something called Teen Titans Go versus Teen Titans coming next year.
That is the Teen Titans from the early 2000s that were the serious Teen Titans that you like and don't hate.
Yep.
I feel it's going to be a dark, just totally brutal, ultra-violent...
It's not the Teen Titans live action.
Between those two teams.
We don't know if this is like, is it a sequel? In which case, I mean, it'd be weird that it's coming out the year after. Is it a new series? Is it a direct-to-Blu-ray? Is it something that's going to be on TV? We don't know.
So I can't remember if I talked about it in the podcast where I reviewed Teen Titans Go to the Movies, but during the credit sequence, and I don't think it's a spoiler now, did have the 2000s era Teen Titans show up, the serious Teen Titans, and... They're like, guys, I think we found a way out, as if they'd been trapped somewhere or something like that. And it was not played really for laughs in that little sequence. It was just a few seconds, but the sense was that was sort of like almost their peace offering to the fans who had not liked how comedic they went with it.
Yeah.
So I guess we don't know. if I did gather that it's going to include the current Teen Titans Go goofy stuff, along somehow interacting with the serious Teen Titans.
It's a weird call. I feel like bring the Teen Titans back, but don't match them up against Teen Titans Go, because then you're basically just
making those fans angry.
You're just driving both groups of fans to fight each other more. I don't think I understand
the original,
what
the old school
intent,
the old is just like sowing chaos, Discordia, Loki, all that.
Yep.
The old school fans, they want the kind of the action adventure with, you know, dramatic, angsty subplots and stuff like that of the thing. They don't want fart jokes.
Yeah.
They're not there for that. Maybe one or two.
The movie this week on Blu-ray, and I'm very tempted to just pick it up.
Well, when you check it out, let me know what you think. I liked it.
Yep. I'm also tempted to check it out.
One of y'all should get it so we can run it at the store. Obviously.
Also, Star Trek is doing an animated comedy series at CBS All Access. They've renewed it. They've already got two seasons.
I guess that makes the third Star Trek TV type project. You got Discovery going, Picard's show, whatever they're going to call it.
Right, and then there's still the rumors of the Starfleet Academy story.
Yeah.
And apparently a limited series based around Wrath of Khan.
Are they actually doing that? Because that was rumored at one point.
Those are all reported to be in development.
Okay. But this animated one is definitely happening.
There's an order for two seasons.
And it's like a half-hour show, I guess?
It is called Star Trek Lower Decks. It is by Rick and Morty writer Mike McMahon. We'll focus on the support crew serving on one of Starfleet's least important ships.
I have no interest in this.
Yeah, Nick and I were talking about this before. And so, Mike said... I want to do a show about the people who put the yellow cartridge in the food replicator so a banana can come out the other end. The developer, Alex Kurtzman, who is one of the guys, the Star Trek guys, said his cat's name is Riker, his son's name is Sagan, the man is committed, he's funny, he's committed. And I'm like, you can love Trek and love it in the wrong way.
Right.
And thinking, well, somebody puts those yellow cartridges in the food replicators is probably the wrong way.
I think so. Dude has worked on Rick and Morty, so he knows something about doing funny. Trek kind of already has been parodied. And in some ways it's straight-faced enough. They've done plenty of funny bits, and especially the original series, I think, had a good comedic tone to it when they wanted to, like Piece of the Action or Trouble with Tribbles and all that stuff.
Yeah.
But it kind of has to play it straight. That's its thing. So sort of spoofing it, kind of, depending on how mocking it is.
Right.
Are they going to do the thing? What I'm imagining, Randy, is essentially Next Wave for Star Trek.
That's what I'm imagining,
where it's going to be like, the Picard or whatever, they'll be like, yeah, we got the replicators all cleaned up, and he's just going to like throw a dish rag in their face and be like, whatever.
Yeah.
And that's going to be the joke. And that's going to kind of become...
You're selling this to me. I'm like, Next Wave for Star Trek? I could do that.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm afraid of, Nick. It's exactly what I'm afraid of. And Next Wave paved the way for Deadpool's rise to stardom. It's all connected. I've got a crazy map of it.
Sure.
So, further interest here, there's a... Mike McMahon actually did a... had a Twitter account in 2011 where he posted episode plots to a fake season of Star Trek The Next Generation. Reader's guide called Star Trek The Next Generation Warped, an engaging guide to the never aired 8th season. None of this sounds good to me. This all seems terrible.
Yeah.
I'm not going to write it off completely. I think there's a chance.
Write it off completely, Nick.
Wow.
No, here's the thing.
You're going to watch it because you have a Trek podcast that you do.
You're going to have to watch it, Dave.
I'll watch an episode.
What if it's good?
That's not going
to
happen.
There's almost no chance I will like it. I will hand that off to someone else to do on that podcast. I do not have that level of devotion.
I
will watch everything Trek just because it has Trek on it.
I will make one devil's advocate argument, and that is the Orville. The Orville shouldn't have worked, and it did, because there's a fondness for the... fondness underneath.
In a way, the reason I think the Orville worked is precisely because they were able to take the... They did file the serial numbers off.
Mm-hmm.
It is its own thing.
It's
so,
not the Star Trek universe.
It's not Star Trek.
But that is also coming from Seth MacFarlane, which is a ton of dick and fart jokes.
I was trying to figure out if this was meant to counter the Orville.
Yeah.
Although what people like most about the Orville actually seems to be more the sincerity kind of.
Then it feels like Star Trek Next Generation,
Right, or TOS, where it's, kind of very sincere one-off short episodes that are all kind of a little very optimistic in their way.
Right.
So... Yes, if that somehow runs through it, that's about the only way I can sort of see it working.
Yeah.
But I already mostly like the Orville with some caveats.
Yeah.
And so, like, I don't necessarily need another Trek-type comedic thing, especially if they're not going to do the drama, too. And I think it's a half-hour thing, so that's not going to leave a lot of room for drama. That's going to mostly be gags.
Orville's a half-hour thing.
Is it? No, it's an hour. So. It's an hour.
Is it?
Yeah. Oh. It's an hour.
I've never watched an episode of The Orville in my life.
Well, that is to say it's 40 whatever minutes.
43.
Okay. Yeah.
Between.
Yeah, I'm sure of it. Yeah. They use the exact format of the original Star Trek.
Okay.
So anyway, yes, I will watch it. I have zero enthusiasm for it.
Yeah,
you might even
either.
Say I hate it without having seen it.
Wow.
And feel it could actually tarnish Trek a little
Next
bit.
Next Wave for Trek sounds exactly like what I was afraid of, and I feel like we're probably going to
But I think maybe it's just like because he's associated with Rick and Morty, which is an aesthetic that comes from Dan Harmon and
I like Rick and
the
Morty.
Other creator.
I don't want Dan Harmon anywhere near Star Trek.
Well, right, but I don't think he ever would. And
this
guy's
already ruined
maybe
D&D.
Already no, the D&D one's good. But this is somebody, you know, maybe who has a huge love for Star Trek writing it in Star Trek. You know.
He likes it the wrong way.
Yep.
How?
Yeah, I
don't.
I understand that's terrible.
It's like if somebody was like, "I'm gonna write the Punisher,"
but
I'm gonna do a lot more farts in it. You know, would you say? I'm open to that?
I'm just saying the possibility that he has his own style that he's, you know, has to work with Rick and Morty, that he can change it to work with Star Trek.
I mean, anything is possible.
Yes. There could be, of all the infinite Earths out there, there could be one where that's a good concept.
There's one where Bill Paxton is the star of the Orville. And he's playing a future version, a descendant of Billy the Extreme.
If they do a Twister episode of this show,
a
Twister-themed episode, it might win me over.
Yeah, if they're like dealing with space weather anomalies.
But I'm going to... For me, this is a code red alert. The shields are up. Photons are locked and loaded. I'm ready to destroy it. Maybe it will surprise me. Maybe. Possibly. Maybe.
All right. IDW is bringing back they're doing a Darkened Wish, which is a new D&D comic that's going to come out next year. What's interesting is that they've been doing D&D comics. Like, they've done, like, four different ones now.
Right. Well, you know, I think the reason why they would probably announce this is because it's a break from what they've been doing with Minsk and Boo.
Right.
The kind of somewhat comedic characters.
Yeah.
Or actually comedic characters from that people liked from Baldur's Gate. Have had, like, what, five miniseries?
Yeah, I think it's like three, I think it's like four.
Okay, I think it's five, but...
Okay, whatever.
You say what you want. and so this, I think it's just a change up. You know, it's an announcement. And at first, I think we were all reading it. We're like, oh, this is some big new ongoing D&D. But no, it's just another miniseries. But it's got a new adventuring party.
It's a new writer, Walters. It's also illustrated by Tess Fowler, who had a short-lived run, Rat Queens.
Yep, good artist.
Great artist.
And it's going to be a young wizard, Helene, as she and her friends journey from the island of Mintarn. Which I have no idea where that island is.
They said it's in the Forgotten Realms, which I was slightly disappointed to hear because that's Baldur's Gate and all of the stuff that they've been doing.
Yeah.
I just, you know, they've got a lot of settings. It'd be fun to shake it up a bit.
Here's the other weird thing, and this is not IDW in any way. This is the writer, Graham McMillan, who's a comics guy who should know better. He's writing for The Hollywood Reporter now. His story is like, D&D aficionados will have a chance to return to the fanfare Forgotten Realms setting next year. And I'm like,
return?
First of all, Forgotten Realms is the default setting for D&D 5e.
Yeah.
Like, everybody's already there. Second of all, well, this is like you said, Dave, like the sixth set of...
Right.
Like,
if it was set in Dark Sun...
Yeah, this is not a return. This is a hang on the Forgotten Realms again. I think
I'm going to play devil's advocate here. Does he think that no one is actually reading the current D&D books?
Maybe.
And That's harsh.
And now people can revisit it.
I don't know.
Readers can return for the seventh time in the last few years.
That's not as catchy.
This article has the sense of someone got a news release and didn't realize that stuff had been going on.
Right.
And basically wrote it as like followed up on IDW's excitement of, oh, look, new D&D.
Right, like essentially the PR worked.
The PR worked.
But that said, I'm always interested in trying a new D&D comic.
Yeah.
They've largely been pretty good in the last 10 years, so hopefully this will continue that trend. They seem to have a pretty good idea of what to do.
So you guys remember how they made Battleship the
Do I?
Movie?
Yeah.
Well, they're apparently...
Who's here saw Battleship?
I did. And Liam Neeson.
Give me a 1 to 10. What would you give it?
About a 3. It's watchable, but it's not, like, awful.
And where would you put it if I were to put it up against Ballistic X versus Sever?
It's better than Ballistic.
And where would you put it up against Lost in Space from the 90s?
I think better than Lost in Space.
Okay. So it's that good.
Apparently, this is Slash Film is one of my favorite things to make fun of because I hate their writing. And they linked to one of their own stories from like 2015. One of their writers did that was board game movies Hollywood should make next. And this is the time of Battleship came out, was such a huge bomb that Universal dropped Monopoly, which was being developed by Ridley Scott. That's a good thing for everyone. There is no way Ridley Scott should make a Monopoly movie.
Correct.
Universal released a horror thriller adaptation.
What if it was a scathing indictment of capitalism?
Yeah, that'd be good.
As the original Monopoly game, for those who don't know, was.
Yeah. Yeah, that I could see.
Yeah. All right.
The Universal released a horror thrill adaptation of Ouija.
Ouija
board.
Hey, wait. Who made? What was the movie? The thank you for what was that thing?
Thank you for smoking.
No, that's not the one. I mean, the one that just came out last summer.
Oh, Bootsy, what's his name?
Yeah. Let him make the Monopoly movie.
Yeah, that'd be okay. I'd watch that.
Black Klansman?
No. It came out somewhat similar
to
times.
Sorry to Bother You.
Sorry to Bother You. Yeah, that's what I was trying to think of. Anyway, I'm just saying he should make it if they have to.
In this article, he then mentions that Universal Warner Bros. Are fighting to make a movie based on role-playing game Dungeons & Dragons, and that the 20th Century Fox was doing Magic the Gathering to the big screen. First of all, none of that's going to happen. Second of all, D&D and Magic the Gathering are different than Monopoly and Ouija board. Most important, this led him...
Those have actual storylines?
To do a story...
And deep world settings?
This led him to say, hey, the tabletop's a niche market, but they could do some games. And then he went on to do a list of, I don't know, a few board games they could make movies of. In fact... no, it was 11 that he made.
If Candyland is not on that list.
He started with... Mice and Mystics, which is a game where you're playing magical mice.
A little bit Secret of Nim medieval style sort of thing.
Mice heroes with magic powers, insect villains, royal castle. Well, they're making that. DreamWorks is set to make Mice and Mystics animated by The Hills Have Eyes director Alexandra Aja.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Jesus Christ.
That dude made some weird movies. I believe he also made that movie Mirrors with Kiefer Sutherland, which for a little while now has been my benchmark of the lowest rated Rotten Tomatoes movie, horror movie, that I still think is okay.
He also made Horns with Daniel Radcliffe.
That was solid.
Anyway.
I'm going to guess he will not be doing either of those modes for this one.
Yeah. No, it'll be sort of like, what was the director that did the guy riding a tractor across...
David Lynch.
Yeah, it's like David Lynch
straight story,
as opposed to all of his other
right.
Insanity.
Every once in a while, they've got that drive in them, or Martin Scorsese making
Hugo,
yeah.
But I want to talk about the rest of these games on this list.
Okay.
So,
by the way, nobody here, I believe, has played Mice and Mystics.
No.
But I could see it coming off as a movie.
Honestly,
it's essentially, like, for those who follow, like, Mouse Guard or the book series Redwall, there's a tradition of little mice with swords.
I gotta say, I would rather see a Mouse Guard adaptation. You know, whatever.
You know, I always found that Mouse Guard was so dour.
It
is. It was, like, the most humorless comic I've seen since somebody tried to adapt Tolkien.
So... number two on this list is a role-playing game, a social game we haven't played called Two Rooms and a Boom, which sounds very much like Resistance or one of these.
Yeah, I've heard about that.
One player is a terrorist bomber, another player is the President of the United States, and this has aged badly. And the rest of the players are split into teams trying to either help the President stay alive or help the terrorists make the kill. I could definitely see that movie.
Yeah.
It'd give me like a 24 thing, but man, it's going to have a different vibe now.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Pandemic is number three on his list. I agree, Pandemic. But the problem is, Pandemic is like, they've made those movies, like Outbreak and all that kind of stuff.
Right. Like, I'm trying to think, is there a way you could make it either more fun? Outbreak was kind of the popcorn version of, like, the Andromeda Strain that Michael Crichton had done in a very serious way in the 70s. I almost feel something, in a weird way, the games that are a little bit more either, some of the ones that are more abstract, like we ages ago talked about doing Carcassonne or Catan, and I feel like those actually are a little bit more ripe for expanding on.
I feel like you could do a Pandemic. I think there's some way you could do it that would make sense.
Now, Randy, would you go serious with it, or pop action adventure?
I'd go action adventure. I think World War Z is about the tone I would look for.
Yeah, I think that's a good call.
A
sort of a team of specialists working together.
Yeah.
Romance blossoms.
You could have some fun with it. You could do like Fast and Furious style, where you get a good ensemble and you do some sort of set pieces and stuff. I think it's possible. The rest of this list, this guy clearly needs to play different board games. Like this guy looks like a very casual board gamer.
Is there a Cards Against Humanity?
There's not, but he did throw like Forbidden Islands on there, Forbidden Desert, and I'm like, yeah, those are good games.
Yeah.
But also, this is clearly a sort of a surface examination of what board games you could make.
I have to say, like, it already like seems to have a deep story, but the world setting for Scythe, that kind of 1920s agricultural war with mechs, is pretty cool, and the art is like essentially all your production art is already done.
Yeah, Scythe would be a
great. It looks so amazing.
Scythe would be great.
Make a movie about Betrayal on a House on the Hill.
That would also work.
Yeah. Although that's kind of weird because that's the whole deal is all the different creatures. Unless they did it Clue style,
and had
like,
endings.
What if they did like 10 different ways
that'd be amazing.
That it went wrong. So that like the last half hour that you're watching it is all these different crazy reveals. He's a werewolf. He's a vulture man. He's Anubis. Yeah.
The house gets picked up by a giant monster.
Yeah.
You know, weirdly, Time Stories actually would work because Time Stories is telling stories.
Yep.
That's
like, you do some fun stuff with Time Stories, too. Yeah. Anyway, I'm for it.
They should consult us. I will take a consultant's fee.
Yes, me too.
Sure.
I'll work up some good ideas. Some real good ideas.
All right. So that's the Twister-related news for the week.
Yep.
We'll be back in just a minute to talk about comics for the week.
One familiar cry. Rogue cast.
We're talking comics for the week of Wednesday, October 31. Spooky comics.
Yes. So scary.
There aren't any spooky comics this week.
My comic has the very real specter of racism hanging over it.
My comic does feature...
Let's try... Well, as you go through it, we'll find the spooky.
Oh, yeah, there's
some
spooky.
We'll find the spooky.
Okay. It is a fifth week, so it's a bit of a lighter week. This is a good week, too, if you've missed some stuff, to check out some stuff of the story, like Spider-Geddon that we've all been digging.
But there's also... And there's a few headliners, too, like the second issue of...
We'll get to it.
Okay. All right. The second issue of ..
Nick, let's go with your pick.
Sure. My main pick is the 11th issue of Marvel 2-in-1.
Yep.
Which, you know, I kind of checked out on the last issue, but I wanted to read this one because this is teaming up The Thing and Reed Richards again.
Yeah. This is almost a new number one for the book because it is the start of, like, I mean, it references all that's been going before in Marvel 2-in-1.
And also references what's happened in Fantastic Four.
But this is, Reed and the Thing together, and it's really good.
Yeah, basically them going after the Thinker and then sort of dealing with their relationship issues between the two characters, like how Ben felt being left alone, not knowing of his friend's fate. While also capturing sort of the FF theme, which is always adventure and exploration.
Yeah.
And sort of alternate realities and worlds. I honestly think Zdarsky does have a great handle on what makes the FF tick. And all the individual characters, because I feel like Ben is well represented, and I also think Reed gets into his head like the way Reed should, and sort of talk all, you know, jargony, and there's a fun take on Doom in here. There's plant monsters, there's action, there's heart.
I feel like there's not enough plant monsters, to be honest.
No, plant monsters are really cool.
I mean, except when Poison Ivy is around, I feel like you don't see them as much as you used to. So I'm excited about that.
I mean, there's very much kind of a Little Shop of Horrors look to the villain here, and I liked it a lot. I also really like the art in here, which is, why am I not seeing Ramon K. Perez, which I'm not familiar with, but I like it. It's heavily inked, and Reed's still rocking his beard, which is Still weird, but, you know, I'm down for it.
I don't know how I feel about it, because it seems to cast him in a slightly more sinister light, I feel like.
Yeah, it feels like you're looking at Mirror Universe Reed.
Yeah, I think that's what it is.
Clean-shaven, good Reed.
I mean, I'm not saying he's not handsome, but now he looks darkly handsome.
Yeah. I just think it's good. Zdarsky really does tell a good FF story, and I've been missing the relationship between Ben and Reed since they are supposed to be best friends.
In the Fantastic Four comic, what issue are they on right now?
They are only on issue 2.
And have they formally met?
The book is clearly late.
So wait, so the Marvel 2-in-1 features them working together before they meet in their own book?
Yes.
Well, they basically, that last page spread in the second issue,
like,
was all the FF coming together.
Okay.
And then this takes place...
This is probably meant to occur probably more simultaneously with the next issue or kind of key off of that, maybe.
But
more.
I guess they didn't want to...
Sure. Honestly, I'm used to timing being a little bit wonky in comic books. I don't assume that if something happens in 1 month in Spider-Man, that it affects the X-Men in that exact same month. You got to let these writers have a little bit of leeway for weirdness. So I was just curious.
Yeah. I honestly think, though, if you're reading the current Dan Slott FF, this is one you definitely want to check out.
Pretty important companion.
I wouldn't say, like, super important, but if you care about these characters, it's definitely something to check out.
Word.
All right.
Randy, what do you have, since you have a single issue?
I have Daredevil 610, which is part 2 of the Death of Daredevil story. He does not die.
Okay.
Still dead.
This issue has Elektra coming back in Matt's life, and him
actually,
dealing
I haven't
sort
seen
of
her for a few years. I feel like
he sort of talks about it's a lot of him talking about why they didn't work together and why they do, why she's uniquely, in addition to being the only one of his lovers who has been killed and actually come back, why they're a good match and why they're not a good match. He's working with his little team of detectives to try and bring down the Kingpin, who...
Those are the detectives from the Wolverine storyline?
Yes, yeah.
Oh, that's
cool.
And some others. Cool. He's still hanging out with those guys.
And some others. Basically, he's got a little team of detectives where they're trying to prove that the Kingpin basically illegally stole the vote. And it winds up with the Kingpin's new assassin, this creepy dude on the trail of them. Elektra's helping them out. Phil Noto does the art. It is very pretty.
Phil Noto.
It's a good solid issue. And this does feel like sort of Sewell's goodbye to Daredevil. It feels like this is wrapping up his run.
That sort of would make sense.
But I'm enjoying it so far.
Phil Noto is Phil Notable.
Dave?
I decided to cheat again this week, y'all. You're going to be excited because I have another graphic novel in store for you. It was so puffy that it takes the place of both of my choices.
Yep.
And this is something that everyone's heard of because it's a graphic novel adaptation of To Kill a Mockingbird. If you haven't read it, get you to a bookstore, young man, or back to high school or whatever, and go read
it.
How's
this spooky? How's it fit into Halloween?
I told you, racism.
Oh, right, you did.
If you can't see how that's scary right now, then I don't even know what's going on. Randy, by the way, real quick, backtracking, what was scary about Daredevil?
The spooky guy who tries to kill everyone. He's spooky. He looks like an evil Catholic.
Like an evil, yeah, like or like a, some kind of Templar knight or
and
something
he,
like
he
that.
He throws like bone
evil
knives
Azrael.
And stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nick, was the plant monster of this spooky?
Yeah, it's the scary stuff.
I understand it. This does have a character named Boo Radley.
is there a Twister reference? Or
Not yet. Give me a minute. Anyway, so here's what's notable about this. I've seen there have actually been a number of like good comic book adaptations of novels over the years, but I think they've been more like sort of YA stuff. But like just in the last week or two, we had the adaptation of Frankenstein,
yep,
which was a slightly pared down version by Junji Ito, the horror master of manga.
Yeah, a little bit different.
And then who did the what's the kid sci-fi one that's from some years ago? Not Colleen Coover.
I'm trying to remember.
They made a movie and Wrinkle in Time.
Wrinkle in Time.
Yeah, that's the one.
Adaptation like 4 years ago.
Yeah, I know. I was just talking about somewhat recent
but that was
Hope
Larson, right?
Yeah, yeah. I couldn't tumble to her name.
You're stretching the definition of recent, but I'll allow it.
4 years is recent. In the grand tapestry of history.
5 years.
On a cosmic, on a
five
cosmic
years
scale.
On a cosmic scale, humanity only began 1 second ago. Anyway, so what was interesting about this, though, I think that makes it somewhat distinct from either of those ones, is... what a like how closely this adapts it. This is not a short adaptation. Let me see if I can get the page count here. It's almost 300 pages long. And I get the impression that this is one of those that includes near every scene, near every bit of dialogue, has a lot of internal monologue stuff. The artwork is exceptionally beautiful and like kind of evokes that kind of faded, you know, hot summer of you know, in the south of the setting. For those who don't know, this is the book by Harper Lee. If you by chance haven't read it or seen the famous movie starring Gregory Peck.
Gregory Peck.
Yeah. It's kind of told from the perspective of the sort of precocious young girl, the scout, the daughter of
crusading attorney at Atticus Finch.
Yeah, and they are from a not particularly well-off family, but they've got their sort of morals, and Atticus Finch ends up, defending a black man who's accused of rape. Yeah. Super serious topics, and there's a reason it's a literary classic. And he's defending him in a county that's going to be jam-packed with racist assholes. Now, I don't see how this has any relevance today, but but I guess maybe they just decided to publish it just for fun.
Yes.
Does To Kill a Mockingbird been banned from schools nowadays?
Yeah, this is, of course, one of the more banned books out there. in just in starting to reread it, it's been quite some time since I've read the novel, and you know, I would always say go to the original source material first. But this looks like this could be an adaptation that's has the qualities from what I read that the movie did in adapting it, and is probably actually more detailed. I would say almost certainly more detailed than the movie as far as representing the original text. And also, I cannot overstate how good the art is in this. So if you have a fondness for these characters, or even if you're exploring the story for the first time, I actually think it would not be difficult to read this first, even if you read it before the book. And if you by chance have like kids or something like that who are not having a little bit of trouble reading, I could see this being a good step into kind of more literary options for them, just because comic books are very readable art form. I was super impressed with it, and I think you will be too.
We are getting more of these, though, because it wasn't last week, but maybe it was the week before we got the H.P. Lovecraft, all of those.
Yep, adaptations of various stories of his with a very kind of cool European art style. Yeah. What else do y'all got?
Nick, what's your backup?
My backup pick is the second issue of the big, giant DC event, Heroes in Crisis. This issue sees Harley Quinn play Go Fish with penguins, a touching scene with Poison Ivy, more about the sanctuary, what it is, what it means for certain characters.
What about the murders?
There's more on murders and sort of the fallout of those murders.
Is this kind of jumping around in time? It's showing stuff from before the murders and after, right?
No, everything should be after.
Are not the interviews with Wonder Woman and Superman and Batman?
The interviews are before, yes.
Okay, that's what I was thinking, that it does jump around a bit.
Yeah, it does jump around a little bit.
Tom King just can't help himself. He can't be linear.
Nope. And there's more Booster Gold and Skeets. It's just kind of, but I can see sort of things ramping up. I
feel like he's got a good handle on the characters.
Yeah, I feel like it is. I mean, it's dark and kind of foreboding in a lot of ways. It's not a happy book.
So we're going to say the scary thing about that is the human heart.
Sure. And also murder.
I guess.
Are we saying murder's no longer scary?
I don't know. If Booster Gold committed the murders or whatever, I don't feel like that's very scary.
I mean, it's possible that he was compelled by somebody. There are things revealed
Skeets?
Here. And if they want to go like the, 52, where Skeets was taken over by Mr.
Mind. Right.
If Tom King wants to make a callback to that, perhaps. I'm still enjoying it. I'm really enjoying Clayman's artwork as well.
Clayman's.
Randy, what is
the Clayman?
By the way, is that 7 issues, 8 issues?
Nine issues.
Oh my god!
They bumped it. It was seven,
now it's 9.
You know, I suppose that's a step, reined in for Tom King, because he's been doing the 12-issue miniseries, 12 issues of The Vision, 12 issues of Omega Man.
Well, Dave. We're only two. Yep. We're only two issues in. It could be 12 issues before we're done.
That's true. They may expand it.
Yep. He may write like Bendis does. My other pick is Tony Stark Iron Man number 5. This is a kind of a one-shot story. It's whereas we've been sort of following the story of Tony Stark and his new company and all that, this takes a break to look at the Maria Stark Foundation, which is a charitable organization outside of Tony Stark's organization. It is run by Arno Stark, Tony's brother.
I know of Arno Stark, but I don't know much about him.
So, apparently, Arno was sickly as a child, and he had to spend most of his youth in a massive life support unit. Tony discovered that his adoptive parents, Howard and Maria Stark, had another son named Arno. Wait, was Tony adopted? That's new.
It was revealed, I think, a couple years ago.
Did Bendis do this?
I mean, it's possible.
God damn it, Bendis. Did Bendis create Arno?
No, he's been around. Like, I feel like he's been around since, like, the 60s or 70s.
I have to look.
Okay. Anyway.
That minor annoyance aside.
Arno Stark is sort of this young, good-looking guy, kind of like Tony. He's got the same sort of drive to help people. But I think there's a little bit of... he's a little bit raw because Tony got to be, the billionaire playboy.
Yep.
And Arno got to spend his life in an iron lung. now that he's up being a good-looking guy, he's using his money to try and help people. So this issue is him writing a letter to Tony, and while he does, he's explaining, he gets gets an arm transplant for a cellist who lost their... cellist, violinist, someone like that.
Fiddler.
Fiddler. A fiddler. Who lost his arm in an accident, and then they give him an arm that lets him play. Then he goes to the desert and creates a strain of wheat that can grow there. Then he goes to, I think, Scotland. He goes to a loch and introduces a bacteria that will eat man-made garbage. And, so he's doing all this work. So this issue, this story in particular, he goes to this farm where everybody's doing sort of bleeding-edge science type stuff.
Yep.
And they've created these cows that have no brain activity. They're just walking meat. So it's horrific.
That's a little disturbing.
I'm going to show you the picture.
I saw it, I think.
Yep, that's the picture.
Ah.
So it's horrific.
It's supposed to be so that we don't feel bad for them they're not sentient, really?
No brain, no feelings, no personality, no sense of self. They're just walking meat.
That is that's almost more real sci-fi. It's kind of disturbing.
It's crazy disturbing. And then something is going wrong because some of the cows are going crazy and attacking people. And so he's trying to figure out what's going on. There's of course a reason. He reasons that out. And there's a bit of a twist at the end as far as what Arno Stark is up to. It's almost feels like you're setting him up as an antagonist for
That's
Tony in a different way.
Arno Stark was created by Kieran Gillen and Dale Eaglesham.
Okay, that's not better.
It was recent.
I do not recognize Arno Stark's viability, but this is a good issue with him anyway. Dan Slott has done an excellent job of rescuing terrible, terrible concepts.
Seen that happen before.
Yeah.
Now, cut this out if it happens to be correct. It's not the Skrull Cows, is it?
It's not the Skrull Cows.
Okay, just checking.
But that would have been amazing.
Okay, just checking.
No. Anyway, so it's a solid issue of Iron Man. Also, this week for me, two Spider-Geddon tie-ins. Vault of Spiders number 1, which is an anthology of a bunch of different spiders. Specifically, an Old West Spider-Man that I really liked. A black and white, legit manga version of Leopardon Spidey with his giant mech.
Yeah, yeah.
And one in which Spider-Man is a... vigilante on the cybernetic, the internet. Oh, and a savage Spider-Man who's kind of a Tarzan Spidey.
That actually all sounds pretty fun.
Spider-Force, which has Kane taking a force of basically a suicide squad of recruited Spideys from different worlds into the ultra-radioactive world where they left the Inheritors to try and stop their big bad boss dad from coming back. Green Lantern Huckleberry Hound is, to me, the standout of the Hanna-Barbera DC crossovers this time out. It's set in 1972. It deals with John Stewart as a post-Vietnam vet with the Lantern Ring who goes down to Earth in the 70s, talks to his old comedy buddy Huckleberry Hound, and basically is told not to use his ring by his trainer, even in the face of all this social injustice. It's by Mark Russell, who wrote the Flintstones and the Tennessee Williams style, whatever that other thing was.
Exit Stage Left.
Exit Stage Left, yes.
Snagglepuss? Yeah.
So it's got that sort of vibe to it. There's also Ahoy Comics, the new publisher, has the horror anthology with the best title ever, Edgar Allan Poe's Snifter of Terror.
Yes.
And Vertigo has a new book about witches throughout the ages called Hex Wives. Dave, what else you got in your stack?
The only other thing that I wanted to mention was the final issue of Britannia, Lost Eagles of Rome. Mm-hmm. That's Valiant's comic about the detective essentially in ancient Rome, and that comes to a kind of cool conclusion in this one. That means that a trade will be on the way soon, so eagle-eyed readers should keep their eyes peeled for it.
Lost eagle-eyed readers?
Yes. And in fact, is this the third one? So there are two previous Britannia trades?
Yeah.
So, yes. And I would recommend starting with the first one because it kind of shows how he became a detective. And it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And I also did want to mention, I haven't read it yet, but I want to. The Doom Patrol from DC's Young Animal line, issue 12, I guess has them traveling to like this kind of fantasy dimension or landscape. So there's all kinds of goblins and stuff like that, and weird fantasy stuff, but also the F-bomb. And the alternate cover for it is made up to look like an old D&D module from, like, the 70s and 80s.
That's pretty cool.
And, yeah, it's, like, the exact style of them. Anyway, I'm looking forward to reading it.
Nick, what else is on your stack?
There are just a few things. Batman Secret Files, which is a one-shot featuring several different stories of Batman from a lot of really good writers, like Tom King, Tom Taylor does a story about Batman teaming up with Detective Chimp.
How many Toms can there be?
There are multiple Toms.
And also Tom.
Yeah, and it was very good. The fourth issue of Extermination, which sees finally reveals what young Cable's deal is, and sort of kind of gives the big thing. What is going on?
Okay.
Why the young X-Men are there. There are reveals. And, of course, more Ahab. Because we all need more Ahab. And then the second issue of Chelsea Kane's series, Man-Eaters, which was just as fun as the first issue,
cool.
I thought, about young adolescents about to have their first period turning into giant man-eating cats.
Same old story we've known since the beginning.
I know. But it was a lot of fun.
And nothing scary about that. It's the way things ought to be.
Is that it for comics?
It is.
That's it.
All right. So usually we take a break right now, but I'm not going to do a break because we just got one quick topic to talk about, and that is Netflix's new Chilling Adventures of Sabrina. So I have seen 3 episodes, Dave has seen 1, and Nick has seen the entire thing.
Yep. Yes.
Because Nick watches TV even more fiendishly than I do.
I think, broadly speaking, well, people have probably seen the trailers, but this is kind of doing for the Sabrina comic what Riverdale did, but in a very different way, where that was kind of like, what would you call Riverdale, trashy fun?
Yeah.
Kind of with a sly sense of humor.
Yeah. The funny thing is, it's the same universe.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Oh, I just assumed it was kind of its own
thing.
There's
even a very tiny crossover.
Is there? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And they make reference to Riverdale several times throughout the series.
I guess I should say this ain't your daddy, Sabrina,
yep,
from the 90s.
Yeah, this is not the Melissa Joan Hart.
With a robot cat and...
But this is not devoid of, like, heart or humor.
It's just devoid of Melissa Joan Hart.
Yes, it's devoid of Melissa Joan
and also the band Hart.
Yes. It does have a really good sound. They use great music.
The interesting thing to me about this is that Chilling Adventures of Sabrina is a comic, and they used panels from the comic in what's his name? Robert Hack?
Yeah, Robert Hack.
They used that in the opening.
Yeah.
And yet, the comic was sort of a 70s period piece, very Rosemary's Baby-esque take.
Yeah.
And it's not that.
No, there are elements in there of that, but it is definitely, I mean, set in modern times because they're using iPhones.
But they also, it has a retro look, so a lot of the cars I noticed were like 60s style cars.
Yeah.
I think the reason they chose that, and I think the reason the original was retro, or the previous Chilling Adventures of Sabrina was retro too, is because I think she was like created in the 60s, and so they kind of use that as the benchmark for style.
Yeah, yep. and that is definitely stylistically their choice of, like, cars and clothes.
The weird thing that I think everybody understands is, like, Batman the Animated Series had modern technology, but clearly a 40s, 50s look to it.
Yeah.
And this is kind of does some of that same with, like, 60s style. Having seen the first episode, Sabrina is, she's about to turn 16?
Yep.
She's about to turn 16 on Halloween, on a blood moon when it's only happened 66 years. So she's clearly some kind of, like, portent. Like, she's a very important. She's also
like,
has...
Like every 16-year-old girl, she's about to sign her name in the, was it the Dark Lord's book?
Dark Lord's book, at which point she...
The Book of the Beast.
Yes. The Book of the Beast. At which point she will owe her allegiance to Satan.
Yes.
Like all 16-year-old girls.
Yeah. Yeah, hilariously, when her adorable and weird aunts...
Yes.
When they're talking about this, but doesn't one of them just very casually, the same way you'd say, like, bless your heart or whatever, she's like, hail Satan.
Yep. Yep.
That is a running theme.
Yeah.
And she also is she has a half... She's half-human. Her mother was human and not a witch.
Right.
And so she's sort of having to choose to turn her back on all the stuff she likes in the world, and she has this group of friends back at her high school, like a... there's a trans girl who's kind of getting beat up by bullies.
Yep.
There's
Got a boyfriend that she's very devoted to.
She's got a boyfriend she's very devoted to. She kind of doesn't want to turn her back on everything.
Yeah, she doesn't want to give up being who she is.
Yeah. And her aunts are kind of pushing her to do that, and the Church of Night?
Yeah, the Church of Night.
Is trying to get her. And it's clear from what I've seen that she has, they're trying not to let on that they need her. In the Church of Night, like that she has a destiny that they're trying to keep from her so that they can sort of keep her under control, and is not working because she is a willful and smart young woman.
Yeah,
played by Kieran Shipka. She's amazing in
this. She's great.
I like the entire cast, actually. Well, but
one thing I was going to mention is I think what feels to me like it somewhat distinguishes it from its very good comics counterpart is they kind of built more of an ensemble cast out of it of kind of likable characters to kind of intercut in there and to bounce off of. So there's her cousin,
Ambrose. Yep. There's her two aunts who I really like. There's the head of the church who is a good character. There's a one of her teachers in the first episode gets turned into a young demon, takes over her body basically.
Yeah,
it's a known character from actual comics.
Okay.
So.
And she seems to be working with the Church of Night, and she's an interesting character too. There's also like. You haven't seen the lawyer yet, right, Dave?
I don't think so.
I like her lawyer quite a bit. It's got a bunch of good characters.
Sabrina's lawyer?
Yeah.
It's weird that she would have a lawyer, but
no,
okay.
It's not.
I mean, there are certain things.
Does it have to do with pacts and things?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Makes sense.
There's interesting... I'm not going to spoil anything, but there's interesting world building throughout the entire series of not just, like... her family life and things, but the broader speaking of, like, the coven.
Well, and also, the whole town is supposed to be sort of like a town like Salem, where there was a outbreak of witches in, like, the 1600s.
Yeah, 13 witches were hung.
But also where that was kind of covered up so the witches could go on to, that remained, could go on to live in peace or sort of, or secretly develop their covens.
Yeah. But there's some stuff, dealing with the school that is fantastic. More characters get introduced. So, I mean, there's a lot more... in the further episodes that kind of shape and create a bigger thing.
There's the three weird sisters who are like the mages from the actual academy that don't want Sabrina as a half-breed to come to her school.
Yes.
And yet she winds up sort of working with them a little bit.
There's a lot of humor in this, and some of it's kind of dry humor.
Yeah.
But there's... the serious stuff can be fairly serious. The ones you just mentioned were pretty creepy.
Yeah, the tone of this is definitely
dark. And occasionally there's very creepy moments in
it.
It's dark, but it's never too dark.
Yeah.
I mean, they're saying Hail Satan and worshiping, giant, statues of...
It's an interesting tone. It does compare to Riverdale, but Riverdale's a little more soapy, and I feel like this isn't quite as soapy as Riverdale.
No, it's pop.
Yeah.
It's,
but I will say, everybody who's seen it has seemed to like it so far.
Yeah, I'm really enjoying it.
Yeah,
if you had told young me that I would like a version of Sabrina, because I, didn't watch much of the Melissa Joan Hart one, I would probably think you would have been lying.
What if I then said, but it's called The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina?
I would have been like, what the hell is that? I also like their version of Salem. I don't know if you guys have gotten...
Yeah, he shows up in the first episode.
Yeah, I couldn't remember where he showed up.
But he doesn't talk. Or does he talk later?
No.
He talked in a different form.
Yes. Yeah, he talked in the goblin form.
Once he becomes a cat, he does not talk.
Okay.
I like that their notion of familiars that don't speak, but they speak to only the person. Like it was sort of like a one-way communication between their brains.
But she doesn't speak to Sabrina, or is that later that she does?
There's some stuff.
Okay.
They don't speak like out loud, but there's sort of verbal kind of.
Okay, because in the opening when she sort of when Salem saves her from like the skeleton thing.
Yeah.
Salem doesn't say anything.
No.
So.
That skeleton thing, by the way, they were chasing through a corn maze.
Yeah,
that was creepy looking. The way it was bouncing off the walls.
It was done well.
Yeah,
yeah. It's Yeah, their effects and their creature effects are fantastic.
Yeah. There's also, if you look on Facebook or probably elsewhere, Netflix has done one of their promo things for this, where they had the cast of Sabrina the Teenage Witch
come and
watch the first episode and talk about it. And it's hilarious to watch Melissa Joan Hart going, well, I don't think I'm going to let my kids watch this one. And they're all like, well, we weren't, like, all our spells were little sparkles and stuff.
Yeah,
like,
the sparkles and campiness.
And they were like, this is really good, but different.
It's like blood magic and actual.
Yeah.
This is Sabrina for a new generation.
Yeah. All right, that's going to wrap it up for us this week. We hope you enjoyed this super spooky podcast.
Yes. It ended on such a spooky note that it's as if everything that came before it might as well have been spooky too, and it was such a thematic thing.
Yes. soon we'll be heading into fall weather. Of course, the thing that Billy the Extreme would appreciate.
Yes. And next week, all of our books will relate to leaves.
Yes. And until that time,
Yo, Joe!
Thanks for listening. If you like the show, do us a favor and spread the word to your friends. Or give us a quick 5-star rating and review on iTunes to help us grow our audience. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or at www.roguesgallerytx.com. We'll be back next week.